Our scripture lesson today, our first scripture lesson, is taken from 1 Samuel chapter 30, verses 1 through 8. And just as a little bit of background and to put things in perspective, this is a time when David and his men have been forced out of their homeland. They're living in the land of the Philistines. And just at the beginning of this passage, David and his men have been fighting with a coalition of the Philistines. But the Philistine commanders decided they didn't trust David. So they sent him and his men back to Ziklag, which is where they were living. Hear now the word of the Lord. Now, when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day, the Amalekites had made a raid on the Negeb and on Ziklag. They had attacked Ziklag, burned it down, and taken captive the women and all who were in it, both small and great. They killed none of them, but carried them off and went their way. When David and his men came to the city, they found it burned down, and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive. Then David and the people who were with him raised their voices and wept until they had no more strength to weep. David's two wives also had been captive, Ahinoam and Jezreel, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. David was in great danger, for the people spoke of stoning him, because all of the people were bitter in spirit for their sons and daughters. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. David said to the priest Abiathar, son of Ahimelech, "Bring me the ephod." So Abiathar brought the ephod to David. David inquired of the Lord, "Shall I pursue this band? Shall I overtake them?" He answered him, "Pursue, for you shall surely overtake and shall surely rescue." This is the word of the Lord.
In our story today, David and his men have just sort of had a series of unfortunate events. We skipped a little bit. We're trying to hit the major events in David's life. And the last, when we last left David, he had just spared the king's life, but he realized that King Saul was never going to stop pursuing him. And so he sort of self-exiled. I can't stay in Israel. The king's out to get me. And so he ends up going to work for the Philistines, which is Israel's enemy. So he's sort of working for the enemy camp, but they don't trust him to go against Israel when they're fighting Israel. And so it's sort of like he's exiled from his homeland, but he's not really accepted in his new land. And it hasn't really been going well. Actually, in the last few chapters of the book of Samuel, David hasn't mentioned the ephod. He hasn't mentioned the name of the Lord. He's just been sort of exiled in every way possible. You can just imagine, if you've ever had a period of your life where just things seem to be going poorly, everything seems to be going bad, you've lost some relationships, somebody you thought was your friend stabs you in the back, and you had to make a move, and it's not going well, and just everything possible is going poorly, right? You ever had that time in your life when just everything goes wrong? And so David and his men are going home, sort of with their tail between their legs, and just, well, at least we can go home to our wives and kids, which I don't have kids, but I'm told that sometimes going home to your kids is not the best relief from your stress. Anyone? it's just sort of like, okay, at least we can go home with our wives and kids, and we'll be nagged at for all the chores we haven't done because we've been out fighting. And so it's just, but at least we have that. At least we can go home. And then you get home, and your house is burned to the ground, all your stuff is gone, and your wives and daughters have been taken captive. You know how it goes, right? I mean, it's just, this is the final straw. This is the final straw after the final straw of all the things that could possibly go wrong in David's life. I mean, it's just, this is his lowest point in his life today. He's done nothing but serve God as faithfully as he possibly can, and everything in his life has gone wrong to this point. So he asks God, what should I do? He's just at a loss. What should I do? And God says, go after them. You're going to rescue them. So that's where we pick up our second reading for today from 1 Samuel chapter 30, verses 17 and following. Hear once again the word of the Lord. David attacked them from twilight until the evening of the next day. No, not one of them escaped, except 400 young men who mounted camels and fled. David recovered all that the Amalekites had taken. And David rescued his two wives. Nothing was missing, whether great or small, sons or daughters, spoil or anything that had been taken. David brought back everything. David also captured all of the flocks and herds, which were driven ahead of the other cattle. People said, "This is David's spoil." Then David came to the 200 men who had been too exhausted to follow David and who had been left at the Wadi Bezor. They went out and met David and to meet the people who were with him. When David drew near to the people, he saluted them. Then all the corrupt and worthless fellows among the men who had gone out with David said, "Because they did not go with us, we will not give them any of the spoil which we have recovered, except that each man may take his wife and children and leave." But David said, "You shall not do so, my brothers, with what the Lord has given us. He has preserved us and has handed over to us the raiding party that attacked us. For who would listen to you in this matter? For the share of the one who goes down into battle shall be the same as the share of one who stays by the baggage. They shall share alike." From that day forward, he made a statute and an ordinance for Israel that continues to this present day. When David came to Ziklag, he sent part of the spoil to his friends, the elders of Judah, saying, "Here is a present for you from the spoil of the enemies of the Lord." Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. There are so many different lessons in this passage that it's sort of hard to pick one direction to go from. So I sort of have almost three mini sermons today. So you have to follow me on this one. The first one is that I think we often have this unspoken belief in the church that bad things don't happen to people who are truly faithful believers. So, I mean, sometimes we all know some bad things happen. We all know, you know, our life isn't totally peaceful and good, but we sort of have this idea, and there's this longstanding false belief in the church that if you are a faithful follower of God, your life can only get so bad. Like, there's a limit. You know, okay, we all have bumps in the road. We all have little hiccups. But your life can really, there's sort of this bubble that God's going to keep you in, because if you're faithful to God, he's going to be faithful to you. And I just have to mention it, that this is a big lie that we tell ourselves, that it's not in the Bible. The Bible does not teach that if you are a faithful follower of God, things will go great for you, or certainly things cannot get terrible. Right, I feel like you hear this from televangelists, you hear this sometimes, we sort of carry this belief, and so when things really terrible happen, sometimes it shakes our faith. But it doesn't shake the faith that the Bible teaches, it shakes this false narrative that we tell ourselves that bad things, like truly terrible things, you know, if you are a believer of God, there's this safety net, and God will catch you when you fall, and you won't actually ever hit the ground. David kind of hits rock bottom here. I mean, he's been exiled from his country. He's lost relationships. He's been working for the enemy of God. They even don't accept him. And then he comes home to his family and find they're all captured and all of his possessions are gone. His house is burned to the ground. So the good news today is that things can always get worse. Wherever you are in your life, things can go horribly, horribly wrong. And the Bible doesn't promise that life is going to be a bed of roses, or if you're good to God, he's going to be good to you. Don't you worry. Things happen in this world. There are evil people. Evil is real. Bad things can happen, and sometimes there's no explaining it. And what are we told that David does? In the midst of this moment, he and his friends, they wept until they had no more strength to weep. Have you ever cried so hard that you couldn't cry anymore? I don't think I have, actually. I don't think my life has never been to the point where I have cried to the point where I didn't even have tears left in me. I've never been at that point, and I seriously pray and hope to God that that won't happen to me. But again, you know, people, "Oh, don't worry, you're a pastor, and bad things don't happen to pastors." Yes, they do. That's the lesson. The Bible teaches us that bad things happen to God's faithful followers. You guys are like, "This is a great first sermon. Thank you so much for sharing." But look, the Bible is honest. It doesn't make false promises. We don't serve a God who makes false promises. The Bible is a real story about real people who had real bad things happen to them. If anything, this is a testimony that this is a true story. This is a story for us, for real people in their real lives. And again, this isn't the end of the story, but just it has to be noted, first and foremost, that if you believe that your life can only get so bad, that God's going to make sure nothing bad happens to you, that's not a Christian belief. That's not a scripture-based belief. That's a fairy tale. It's a narrative. And the Bible doesn't want us to have false beliefs. Bad things can happen to good people. Number two. So the question is, if truly bad things can happen to good and faithful people, what do we do with that? Where do we go with that? And David shows us sort of how to respond into that moment. First of all, I think the question, or the first lesson is, don't pretend everything's fine. Sometimes I think Christians are, because we hold this false belief that bad things don't happen to faithful people, we have this secondary action that we pretend everything's fine. Because if things are going poorly for me, then I must not be a good believer, or I must not be praying hard enough. And so I'm going to just, when people in church ask me, how you doing? I say, everything's fine. Anyone else ever been guilty of that? You've been having a rough week, you get to church. Yeah, every single hand should be up. You liars. You know? We've all done it. I've done it too. I'm like, I'm having a terrible week, and I just, yeah, everything's fine, because I don't feel like talking about it, or whatever. But I think sometimes there's this false belief that, you know, bad things don't happen, and so we pretend everything's fine. David and his men do not pretend that everything's fine. I don't know if this is just... Other cultures are much better at this. If you ever, you know, see on the news, like when there's been a bombing in the Middle East, if you ever catch a glimpse of their funerals, they are screaming at the top of their lungs. Places in the Middle East and Africa, even South America, other cultures are very good at wailing. They tear their clothes, they cover themselves in ashes. Other people are really good at mourning. They don't pretend everything's fine. I don't know if it's just a white people thing. Like, we like to pretend every, you know, just, oh yeah, I'm very respectable, you know, suit and tie, you know, kind of white person, and everything's fine. I don't know what it is, but we especially pretend everything's fine when it's not. And David's men do not have this problem. They wept until they didn't have strength to weep anymore. They cried themselves out. They were very honest. You know, when your clothes are torn and you're covered in ashes and you're face is covered in tears, and you don't even have the strength to stand, no one walks up and says, are you okay? No, I'm not okay. It's okay to admit that things are broken. It's okay to admit that you're not doing all right. And in fact, the things that break God's heart should break your heart as well. When there's tragedy in the world, we should weep. We should be okay with admitting that things aren't fine, that this is not the way the world is supposed to be. So that's again, it's okay to admit that it's not okay. But there's the other temptation. So first of all, we pretend everything's fine, but then we just look for someone to blame. That's another thing. When things aren't going well, we look for the first person to blame. And unfortunately, in this situation, that was David. David, you led us into this wilderness. You led us out of our homeland. You led us out into the countryside. And now all of our friends and family are gone, and you're the leader, and you just look for the first person to blame. Again, an easy temptation to make. Just look for someone to blame, because if we can just throw rocks at someone, if we can just point to that over there, then that will make us feel better. But of course it doesn't. Even if you look for someone to blame, your house is still burned, your family's still gone, you're still out in the wilderness, you're still in exile. It doesn't fix your problem. So what does David do? He doesn't pretend everything's fine. He doesn't look for someone to blame. We're told David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. When hardship comes, when life gets really hard, the lesson is this should drive you into the presence of God. Some people, life gets hard, and they say, well, God's clearly abandoned me, so I'm going to stay far away from God. I'm going to separate myself from the church. So sometimes when things are really going bad, we cut ourselves off from divine help. I don't want your help, Lord. You got me into this mess. And David does the opposite. David strengthens himself in the Lord. He goes into God's presence. This whole time he's been in exile, we haven't heard him mention God once. if you were reading the last few chapters of Samuel. But now he goes back. He realizes, when things are at their worst, I need help. He's happy to admit that he needs help. And so he asks for the ephod. The ephod, if you recall from several sermons ago, was the official way that you could discern God's will. It was the sort of official measuring stick in the nation of Israel for, if you want to know what God's will is on a certain subject, if you had the ephod, this is a crude analogy, but it was sort of the divine magic eight ball. You could ask God a question, he would answer you directly. It was the only way of officially knowing God's will. You didn't have to worry about a false prophet. You didn't have to worry about bad advice. You knew for 100% certain what it is that God wanted. And David has not asked for the ephod since 1 Samuel 23. So he didn't ask for God's advice when he went into exile. He didn't ask for God's advice when he went to work for the Philistines. He hasn't asked for God's advice for a long time. But things are at rock bottom, and we hear David for the first time coming into God's presence, "Lord, what should I do?" So, again, things can go wrong, but when things do go wrong, we don't pretend everything's fine. We don't look for someone to blame. We come into God's presence and ask, what should I do? That's the second lesson. And so David goes and he rescues the people. And actually, he's been traveling nonstop for days. And then as soon as they realize their houses are burned down, they cry until they don't have any more strength to weep. And then they immediately get up and go after the people who've taken their family and friends. And so their strength is beyond depleted. I mean, they've been traveling for days on horseback. They cry until they can't cry anymore. And then they travel for a couple days more into the wilderness after the people who'd taken their guys. And some of his guys are just too exhausted. Their horses can't walk anymore. And so they leave some of the guys behind. Again, David, trusting, God will provide. I don't need my full strength. I don't have to wait until we're rested. I don't have to wait because I know that God's going to be at work in this moment. And so they strike out at the men who God has promised that he would deliver them into his hands. And so they fight them for 2 days straight, from morning until the evening of the next day. So after having been traveling for a week nonstop, crying all night, they travel for days and then fight for 48 hours, 36 hours straight. We're talking, this is a monumental Herculean effort. They clearly do not have the strength to win this battle unless God shows up. So David trusts himself into the hands of the Lord, takes on the battle, and they're completely 100% victorious. Not only do they get every single thing that was taken from them back, all their wives, all their children, all of their family, and everything they recover, but they also recover the Amalekites' property as well. So not only do they get back what was taken from them, they get back the bad guys' things. I mean, it's just, this could not have gone better. Talk about a reversal of fortunes from David's trajectory as things just keep getting worse, and then they hit rock bottom, and then all his things are taken from him, and so it's double rock bottom. And all of his friends that have been following him, they're thinking about killing him because, you know, it's like clearly things aren't going well. And so we got everything back, plus the livestock, plus the herds. And so they get back to the camp, and this should be a moment of celebration, but a couple of the guys in David's camp say, "You know what? Those guys who are too tired to fight with us, I don't think they should get a share of the spoils. Like, we'll give them their wives and kids back, but everything else is ours. Like, even the stuff that they had taken from them, we're going to divide up and keep for ourselves." This is what is referred to as a jerk thing to do. Right? Like, these are your friends. They've been with you in the wilderness. They were guarding your things while you were fighting. And you're like, "Yeah, you're not going to get a share of the spoils." And David goes, "No." And they're like, "What do you mean, David? We earned this. You know, we traveled all night long. We fought for 36 hours straight. We did this Herculean effort. And these are our things." And David teaches us a third lesson. So there's one, you know, let's not pretend everything's fine. Two, how do we deal with heartache? But third, just as importantly, how do we deal with success? Because, I find this is where a lot of people go astray, especially in the United States. Our country is so much more wealthy than most of the modern world. Most of any point in human history, things are going really well for us, by and large. Most of us aren't struggling for food from day to day. We don't work all day hoping to get one mouthful of food like some of the third world does. things are going pretty well for us here in the United States. Even poor people in our country are doing better than wealthy people in other countries. Like, it's, you know, things are going well. And so David shows us how we deal with success. He gets all of his things back, plus more. He's now wealthier than he was when he started. And as so often happens, when things are going really poorly, some people walk away from faith, but some people, oh Lord, I'm in my lowest point, please help me. And then I get to my high point, and I say, I did it. You know, that's exactly what David's men did. Well, they cry out to God for help in the midst of their misery. God helps them, and then they say, look what we did. We conquered, we took the spoil, we succeeded, and we don't want to share what we have because we earned it. And David is sort of looking at them like, are you out of your minds? You cried out to God for help, and then God provided. The reason that you're not suffering like you were, the reason that things are going well in your life is that God has been at work in your midst. You know, it's not a coincidence that all of this wealth fell into your hands. We asked for God. We asked for God's help. God promised deliverance. We acted. God delivered these things. He said, this isn't the spoil that we recovered. You can't do this with what the Lord has given you. The Lord has preserved us. The Lord has handed over the raiding party. God's been at work in our midst. It's the way that we look at things, and I think a lot of us in this country do this too. When we talk about giving to the church, when we talk about being generous with our time and talents, we say, well, it's my time, it's my money, it's mine to do with what I want. And David is not under any illusion that what he has is his to deal with as he chooses. David says, everything that we have is a gift from God. God has given us everything we have. And so we don't take credit for ourselves. We aren't selfish because God has given us everything that we have. So oddly enough, that some people turn away when things are going really poorly, but more often we see people walking away from the church, walking away from faith when things are going really well. Because everything we credit ourselves, we look for others to blame when things go poorly, and we credit ourselves when things go well. Isn't that convenient? But David reminds us, it is God who delivers. When you were at your lowest point, when you didn't have the strength to go on, it was God who turned things around for you in your life. David points in all things, in all aspects of his life, to the coming of Jesus Christ. When you were at your lowest point, when you couldn't even save yourself, when you didn't even have the strength to weep anymore, that's the brokenness of the human condition. All of us, without God's grace, without God's intervention, in some way, shape, or form, would be at that point. We would be totally broken and lost. We would weep until we couldn't weep anymore if God were not sustaining us and holding us up. And it is Jesus who delivers. It is Jesus who provides the victory. By his action, by his effort, God provides us with grace. God shows us that we're loved. God gives us the blessings that we have, the talent that we have, the money that we have. It's a gift from God. Because God takes the penalty. For all, again, David, even David, it's easy to just forget. It's easy to forget to turn to God in prayer. It's easy to ask God what you should do with your life. It's easy to just go for a period of time, for a couple of years even, where you just sort of forget that God's at work in your life. David reminds us that we should constantly be turning back to God, giving thanks to God for the grace that he has shown us. Friends, if you are at your lowest, if you find yourself in the midst of heartache, or if you find yourself in success, know that God is at work in your life and that he invites you to be in relationship with him, to strengthen yourself in him, and that by the grace, mercy, and peace of Jesus Christ, you can have peace that is not tied to your situation, because God has so much more in store for us than we'd ever planned for ourselves. Friends, this is the good news of the gospel. Thanks be to God.